Welcome in. I'm John Lyons. And the Red Sox game is officially canceled, which means I'm no longer doing rain delay coverage. I'm just doing regular sports talk here on WEEI. We've got a lot to get to. We already talked some Red Sox, but if you want to continue the Red Sox conversation, you can join us, 617-779-7937. Of course, we have the text line as well. We are going to talk Patriots quite a bit later. I'm going to get to BC football as well. They have a huge game tonight. I'll be taking you up until 6 p.m. And again, BC football, huge game tonight against Michigan State, which you can hear right here on WEEI. But right now, I'm going to bring in a very special guest, John Ryan of the Predictive Playbook Sports Channel and RotoWire. And look, folks, if you want to make some money on sports, you should probably listen to what John Ryan has to say. John, really appreciate you taking the time and waiting with us through that rain delay. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and sorry the Red Sox aren't able to play, but I think they'll have a doubleheader tomorrow the way it looks.
Yeah, it'll be a doubleheader tomorrow. Red Sox will play at 12:35 and again at 5:30, so two games for the Red Sox tomorrow. But hey, the Red Sox loss is our gain because we get you on here, John. I want to jump right into it. You, traditionally, when you've been a guest before, you've talked about in-game betting and how valuable that can be. There's a pretty big matchup going on right now in the Big Ten. Michigan is up 14-0 on USC. It's in the second quarter. Anything in that game as it progresses that you like to live bet, or is Michigan too much right now and you want to be hands-off?
I would be hands-off on this game. The one game I am looking at, though, John, if I can digress to another game
sure.
here, is 3 minutes and 33 seconds ago in the half, and Notre Dame's only winning by 4 over Miami of Ohio, 7-3. That's pretty shocking to me. I think Notre Dame will get the act together here at halftime. So if I was going to do any live betting right now, I think Notre Dame is probably a pretty good bet right now.
So I want to quick follow up on that. So Notre Dame obviously had the shocking loss to NIU already this season. Does that color your thinking at all to in-game betting, or is it just like you said, hey, they're a good team, you know, they're a talented team, they'll get back on track in the second half?
I think despite that loss, their confidence is probably a bit shattered after that loss, but you know, they did bounce back very nice against Purdue with a crushing defeat of Purdue, scoring 66 points, if I remember right. So that's pretty good. They have the pedigree, and I think, you know, the coaching staff knows what to do. They're at Notre Dame, obviously, and they're very good coaching. If you have to be at Notre Dame, you've got to be good. So I think they'll read them a message at halftime and get the act together and stop playing so afraid of making a mistake or afraid that something bad's going to happen or, oh, my God, this is another Northern Illinois game. And we should be crushing these guys. And I think that's what goes through these minds. And keep in mind, these kids, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, some older, but for the most part, they're just getting into that maturation process, if you will, with sports. And a lot of times it can be Murphy's Law that, you know, okay, what else bad is going to happen now? It's like, you know, being in quicksand. The more you fight, the worse it gets. So I think Notre Dame here only up 4. With 3 minutes to go in that first half is stunning, but I don't think they're going to lose this game.
I do have two other college football games I want to ask you about, John, before we go to the NFL. First one, marquee game of the day, Tennessee-Oklahoma, 7:30 p.m. kickoff tonight. What are your thoughts on this game? I mean, Tennessee, sixth-ranked team, you know, traditional SEC team, Oklahoma, the new kid on the block in the SEC. What are your thoughts kind of on this game tonight?
Well, I'll tell you what, I do have a best bet on this game, John. So it's
okay.
Good that we are talking about this one because I like Oklahoma quite a bit. So this is I do 5-unit, 10-unit. This is an 8-unit graded play from the model. And it's backed by a lot of stuff. And I'll just give you the one item. So we're taking Oklahoma plus the 6.5. This algorithm or betting system, if you will, has gone 15-23 straight up, which sounds terrible, but keep in mind we're betting on a 6.5-point dog with a money line. It's gone 24-14 against the spread for 64% winning bets over the last 10 seasons. You're going to bet on dogs priced between 3.5 and 9.5 points, The favorite is coming off a game in which they scored 60 or more points, and that would be Tennessee, obviously. And the favorite held their previous opponent to 14 or fewer points. So the setup is a regression of Tennessee. Oklahoma, to me, last week looked really good. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Oklahoma win this game by a touchdown. I really do like Oklahoma quite a bit.
Well, that's interesting to know. We'll keep our eyes on that one. And locally here, John, in Boston, we have a big game tonight. And I'll be honest with you, John, it hasn't been too often over the last decade or so we've said it's a big game for BC football, but it really is tonight. This is a team coming off a close loss to Missouri. They're hosting Michigan State. And I'm really interested to get your take on this game because Michigan State, they won four games last year. They had a really bad year. They've already won three games this year, but no real marquee wins. They beat Florida Atlantic, Maryland, and then Prairie View A&M. So no real marquee wins, but again, three wins already. Last year they had just four, whereas BC had that top 10 road win against Florida State and, of course, the close loss to Missouri. What are your thoughts on BC tonight? I mean, do you look at this as, you know, BC is the clear favorite, or has Michigan State got something going there with those three wins?
I like Boston College here, and it's not because I'm on a Boston show either, John.
I appreciate that, John.
Boston College to be the better team. And Michigan State, you know, is off to a nice start, but look at the quality of the opponent. BC, as you said, played Missouri, a top five team. They played Florida State. Well, now, in hindsight, we know that Florida State wasn't so good. They were actually the only team the past 30 years or more. It might be NCAA football history for all I know, but my database goes back 30 years, that was ranked in the top 10 in the preseason polls and went 0-3. It happened in 2020 with Penn State during the COVID season, but I don't count that because if you're playing in a stadium that normally seats 112,000 and it's empty, they can't be the same atmosphere as when you do play and it's a home game, it's Happy Valley and it's filled. But that is the only team that has ever done it with regular conditions. So maybe that's not such a great win, although it's certainly a confidence booster. You can't take anything away from BC for winning the game. But being right now at 5 points, I think that's pretty good. And the way I would play this is do maybe 60% of your bet. Say you're $100 better, do $60 pre-flop, and then almost hope that Michigan State does score first because they're playing with some confidence now. Nothing to say they won't score first. It doesn't really matter in college football who scores first. But if they do, then you can add that remaining part of your $100 bet at a much better price than -5. For example, if Michigan State scores 7-0, that line is going to probably come down to about pick 'em, maybe about 1.5 favor. But that's a lot better than 5. So that's where I like to buy low and sell high from my Wall Street days. And sports betting is the same thing, exactly the same thing.
John Ryan of the Predictive Playbook Sports Channel and RotoWire joining me on WEEI now. And John, I want to move to the NFL here. So the New England Patriots, our team up here, had a bad loss Thursday night, 24-3 to the Jets. I want to ask you, looking forward, do your models say anything about maybe what the rest of the season might look like for them, either from a betting perspective or just a football perspective? Because you know they lose badly, but it's on a short week on the road. So just curious if your models kind of have any thoughts or any information about them going forward.
Well, I'll admit the truth. I was on the Patriots Thursday night and lost. It was an 8-unit play. I was very concerned about the offensive line. I think we all were, especially in the Boston area, just completely banged up. And what made me stay with the play with the analytics was that the fact that the line didn't move based on the news. And normally I would think that when the offensive line is basically on the injured list, the line would move 2 or 3 points, and it didn't. And that confirmed I should be on the Patriots in that game on Thursday. Didn't work out. We obviously don't win them all. Sometimes, we win 60% in the season. That was one of the 40% is how I like to say it. But I think going forward here with the Patriots, I think they're in good shape. Preseason, I did bet over 4.5 wins. I thought that was just way too few. And I in the NFL, how many upsets are there? We saw the Patriots beat the Bengals, which I was on them in week 1. last week was the Raiders over the Ravens. And it happens a lot more than people think. The Patriots do have the 49ers coming up. They'll be 9.5-point underdogs, but they're going to have rest. I hope that offensive line can get a little bit healthier and more, cohesive. Then they have the Dolphins. So two games in a row, they're going to be pretty tough, but they have the Dolphins at home. And if memory serves correct, John, I think they own the Dolphins, right? I mean, it's been a while since they have.
Yeah, I think they lost both to Miami last year, but yeah, prior to that, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then the schedule gets a little bit friendlier for them, and you just never know with the injuries in the NFL. It changes the landscape every single week. Now we see the Packers, for example, without Jordan Love, being discounted and by 3 or 4 points every single week with the betting market. So you don't know right now, but I do think the Patriots, not a playoff team this year, but they're definitely heading in the right direction, and they win 5 or 6 this year, I think, pretty easily.
All right, John, I got a couple games I want to ask you about for tomorrow before I let you go. First up, Chargers and Steelers. Both of these teams are 2-0, but I'm not really sure yet how to feel about either team because both have had some wins against teams. For example, the Chargers, one of their wins, they blew out a bad Panthers team. The Steelers beat the Falcons in a game that the Falcons just really looked bad. So 2-0 teams, it's a +2.5 for the Chargers. Anything you like in this game?
I like the Steelers, and it sounds, we're very early in the season, John, but did put a little pizza money bet on the Steelers to win the division. I knew it was crazy to do, but it was value. It was 28-1. And I'll be the first to admit, I never in a million years saw the Steelers being 2-0 and the Ravens being 0-2. That just is unimaginable before the season started. But there they are, Pittsburgh's 2-0. The thing I like most about the Steelers is Mike Tomlin, the head coach. Never once did he have a losing season. And I think he should get the kudos that Bill Belichick, for example, has gotten over the years as being one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game. He's done some things with teams that, on paper, probably should have won 4 or 5 games, and they end up winning 8 or 9. So he is a big factor with them and their defense. Their defense is going to keep them in every single game that they face. They're very good. If they stay healthy, this team really could make a run and surprise everybody in that division. And the Ravens play Dallas on the road tomorrow. What if they lose that one, John? And then next week they have to host Buffalo.
So that, John, actually,
it's unimaginable to think they would be 0-4. But if they are, Pittsburgh has a path to try to steal the division.
That's what you lead me into my final question here. I wanted to ask you about the Ravens and Cowboys. It's only a 1-point line. Ravens, desperate team, 0-2. Cowboys, 1-1, and it's been a real Jekyll and Hyde season for them. Look great in week 1, terrible in week 2. Does your models have any intel on this game in any way to sway things?
I will be on the Ravens, and this game I think is going to be a little bit more high scoring than people think. What's the first thing you think of when you say Ravens?
Defense, right? Yeah.
And Lamar Jackson. But I think Harbaugh is going to open up this offense a little bit more, being that they are 0-2, and they need to get this into a, more of a pinball type of game, if you will, than trying to win it, 20-13. The Cowboys have a very good offense. I don't know what in the world happened last week. I still don't know if the Saints are that good or the Cowboys maybe are overrated yet again for another season. But I do think the Ravens are going to come out and show who they are. And I'd like the Ravens to win this game by at least 7 points tomorrow on the road. And after all, that whole team knows they don't want to host Buffalo being 0-3 to start the season, because very few teams make the playoffs being 0-3. In fact, 0-2 teams are 11.9% make the playoffs. Now, 90% of those teams, John, are playoff teams in the previous season.
Okay.
So with the case of the Giants or the Panthers, unfortunately, being 0-2, it's unlikely that they're going to make the playoffs. That's the way it goes. But you got to still play the season out, and I think the Ravens are the correct bet tomorrow.
All right, he is John Ryan of the Predictive Playbook Sports Channel and RotoWire. Like I said before, if you want to make some money on sports, you should follow this guy at John Ryan Sports 1 on Twitter. John, always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for taking the time, and have a good rest of your day.
My pleasure as always, and go Sox.
Yeah, there we go. Go Sox twice tomorrow. That is John Ryan, and I am John Lyons. And we are here on WEEI until 6 o'clock. We are going to be joined by Tom Carroll from Alumni Stadium to give us a preview of BC and Michigan State in about 45 minutes or so. But coming up next, I want to talk about this Patriots game from Thursday night. I want to talk about what went wrong. I also want to talk about Drake May's time in and when he should maybe get his next time on the field. That's all coming up next here on WEEI. Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. I'm taking you up till about 6 o'clock. We do have BC football against Michigan State later tonight here on WEEI. Going to talk some Patriots now. Lost 24-3 to the Jets on Thursday night. Dismal performance by the New England Patriots on Thursday night. And I'm here with producer Stiz. How are you today, Stiz?
Hello, Mr. Lyons.
Kind of a whirlwind day for us, Stiz, huh? A
lot going on.
Yeah, we had, so I came in originally, and it was Red Sox pregame, and then it was going to be the Red Sox game, and then it was going to be a half hour or so leading into the BC game. And instead, I did Red Sox pregame, but got to rain out, and I'm here until 6 o'clock. Stiz, you were running back and forth between both production rooms from the Red Sox. Because what people don't know, Stiz, the Red Sox production room, separate room than this regular talk show production room. So you got your steps in getting us on the
That's
air.
Right. That's right. I thought it was going to be a nice, easy day. Come in, Red Sox beat the Twins, then we can listen to BC win the game, and instead weather had different plans.
Instead, we have to do actual work, is what you're saying. Yeah, instead. By the way, Stiz, did you see this Patriots game Thursday night?
I did.
Yeah. Not great, huh?
No.
As the kids say.
I felt so bad for Jacoby Brissett.
So that's kind of where I want to start off, right? The Patriots lose 24-3. There was a lot to dislike in this game. And by the way, if you want to join the conversation, 617-779-7937. I'd be happy to take your calls. Of course, we have the text line going as well. I want to start Patriots right now, though. There was a lot to not like in this game. And I want to start offensively. Jacoby Brissett, he sacked three times in this game. It could have been seven or eight, it feels like. And that's the same deal in the Seattle game 5 days before. Right, not a lot of high sack, but he could have been sacked seven or eight times. And that's where this offensive line is at. Again, Jacoby Brissett, excuse me, you sacked three times against Seattle. Sacked five times for 46 yards against the Jets. Drake May, in limited playing time, was sacked twice. So this is an offensive line. And depending on who you follow, right, there's PFF, there's Next Gen Stats. So they have different kind of exact numbers, but roughly they're giving up pressure 45 to 50% of the time, which is a staggering amount of pressure to be allowed. And we're looking at an offensive line that Caden Wallace is playing left tackle, his first ever start playing left tackle. Let's not forget, folks, didn't play left tackle in college. He had just under 2,300 snaps at Penn State. All of them were at right tackle. Then he comes here. Obviously, the first two games doesn't play any, doesn't start at left tackle. Got a little bit of time late in that Seattle game. So his first start in college or the pros at left tackle, short week, Thursday night against the Jets in a great defensive front. Just a brutal, brutal spot. Then next to him, City So was out. You have Michael Jordan playing most of the game. Then you have David Andrews at center. Fine, he's okay. Mike Onwenu at right tackle. Love Mike Onwenu. Had maybe his worst game as a Patriot at right tackle in this one. Layden Robinson at right guard, not much better. So we're looking at an offensive line that almost completely broke down in this game against the Jets. And look, the Jets have a great front. So does San Francisco coming up, by the way. But if you're Jacoby Brissett, first of all, this guy probably deserves extra like hazard pay for the hits he's been taking. But if we look at this, because there's been a lot of discussion this week about, well, why not just play Drake May? Drake May got in there and he moved the ball down the field. And that's true. He also almost threw an interception on his first pass. But yeah, look, that's true that he did move the ball pretty well. But Jacoby Brissett was sacked five times in this game. I think a younger quarterback, a Drake May, a not as fully developed quarterback, it might have been eight, nine. And I know the argument is, well, Drake May is more athletic than Brissett, so he can run around more. And that's true. But Drake May doesn't feel pressure in the same way that Jacoby Brissett does. And that's not his fault, by the way. I mean, he's brand new. He's a rookie. No rookie is going to feel pressure the same way as a guy that's been in the league almost a decade. And you could tell me, Jacoby Brissett, hey, he's a journeyman. Hey, he's below average. He should be a backup. Not arguing any of those points. But when you've been in the league nearly a decade at the very least, you get used to some of those things, and your ability to feel pressure is a lot better. I mean, look, I go back to that Seattle game, end of the first half, Jacoby Brissett gets a pass away that's incomplete, but he was almost sacked, could have been a safety. He felt the pressure off the edge. Does Drake May feel that pressure? I don't necessarily think so. And that's the thing against the Jets, right? So you have this in San Francisco coming up, similar caliber defensive line to the Jets. And you look at this game, I mean, how many times did Jacoby Brissett have to scramble out of pressure? So yeah, it doesn't go down as a sack. Goes down as maybe a pressure, maybe a hurry. But with May, a lot of those are probably sacks. And he's going to get beat up. And I'm not saying, oh, don't play May just because he could get hurt. And look, that is a risk. But it's not going to serve his development if he's just getting pummeled every time he's back. I mean, we saw it in the one drive that he had in garbage time. Yes, he moved the ball okay, but it was in garbage time. The one drive he had, he got sacked twice. Got hit two other times. So four times he gets hit in one drive, sacked twice. I mean, extrapolate that out for a full game. What do you think is going to happen? So, I mean, look, if I'm the Patriots, I would eventually like to see Drake May play. I would. Putting him in against San Francisco would be a massive mistake. And this offensive line needs to improve even to put him in against Miami. And I know you're thinking, well, what can really improve in the next few weeks? And look, this team right now is in a bad spot. They blew a game against Seattle because of situational mistakes, which how many times have we seen them do that the last couple of years? But now they got physically outclassed against the Jets team, especially their offensive line. So what can improve between now and, say, the Miami game, even the Houston game in week 6, Tennessee game in week 9? Well, maybe Sidy Sow comes back. Maybe Caden Wallace is playing left tackle and he gets a little bit more comfortable. So then maybe your offensive line feels a little bit better. Look, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you folks. Their offensive line is never going to be good this year. But it can get better than what we saw on Thursday night. And if it can get better, then that's a better situation for Drake May to play in. And there's no such thing as a perfect situation for a rookie QB. Because if there was a perfect situation for a rookie QB, you wouldn't need a rookie QB. It's a trick question. So there's no such thing as a perfect situation. But it doesn't also have to be a terrible situation. I mean, look at what's happened with Bryce Young in Carolina. Look at what's kind of happened with Caleb Williams in Chicago. Right? Those aren't good situations yet. And I think the Chicago situation is a lot better than Carolina. But again, it's a tough spot for a rookie QB to be coming in at all with an offensive line that's as bad as the Patriots. It's a brutal situation. I think it's just, I don't want to use the word an unfair situation for Drake May, but it's going to be an unproductive situation. Like, you can tell me he's got a better arm than Brissett. He's got a higher ceiling than Brissett. That's all true. It's just right now is not the time to have that guy in. It's just not. As much as we might want to see Drake May, as much as we want to hope for the future, it's just not the time. Because again, the offensive line is not in a spot where you can adequately protect a young quarterback just for him to get the ball out. Forget about injuries and all that. Just get the ball. And another piece of this too, you look at this wide receiver group. I would sit here and say I probably like their wide receiver group more than a year ago, but these guys are struggling to get separation against man coverage. They're doing okay in some zone stuff, but struggling to get separation and man coverage, except maybe DeMario Douglas. So if you're Drake, where would you even go with the ball? I mean, there was several times in that game. And look, I'm not telling you Brissett was great. He overthrew Hooper on that deep crosser route. That should have been there. But a lot of times Brissett drops back and nobody's open. And that's a big problem. Like Jalen Polk, I like him. I think they need to try to use him a little bit more, but he's got to be better at getting open. And maybe when they get Kendrick Bourne back, that'll help too. So the receivers need to be a little bit better. Also, the offensive coordinator, Alex Van Pelt, for my money, the offense pretty bland over these first few weeks. And look, it helped them win week one. I'll give them credit for that. But a pretty bland offense over the last, especially the last two games. And it felt like kind of slow to adjust. Like they were going a lot of play action early against the Jets. Didn't feel like it was working well. They weren't running the ball enough. And it was just slow to adjust. And this was an issue on defense too. But slow to adjust. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson lost a fumble, but that was only his sixth carry of the game, and that's in the second half. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson's your best offensive player. Should he be getting his sixth carry in the second half when you're a running-based team to begin with against a Jets defensive line that in week one against San Francisco, and I know that's a different animal, but got smoked in the run game and over the last couple of years, not been a very good run defense? I mean, should that really be his sixth carry of the game? And I'm not excusing the Stevenson fumble. That was bad. He's fumbled three times in three games. Thankfully, he's recovered too. But should that really be his sixth carry of the game. So when you think of, all right, what can really change for it to be better for Drake May? Well, all three of those things. I mean, you would hope Van Pelt's going to get a little bit more comfortable as an OC. You would hope he's going to get a little bit more creative over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to be prime Josh McDaniels calling plays, but you would hope there's going to be at least some more creativity, some more consistency in that offensive play calling. The offensive line can get a little bit healthier in these next few weeks. It can get a little bit better because, again, Caden Wallace, if he's going to be playing left tackle for a while, I expect he will get a little bit better. Anyway, he won't be lining up wrong like we saw against the Jets. And then receivers, if you get Bourne back, that'll help. Maybe Douglas and Polk, you know, continue to get better. Douglas continues gets open more. Polk maybe improves on that. So then that, all of a sudden, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's a great situation for a rookie QB. But if you just, what I just said, if that happens, your O-line gets healthier and a little bit better. Again, I'm not even saying a lot, a little bit. Your receivers get a little bit better separating against man coverage. And your play caller gets a little bit more comfortable and creative. All of a sudden, that's a better situation than what you have right now. Because if you had started Drake May against Seattle, and especially against the Jets, I think it would have been a really bad night. I mean, that defensive front, what we saw happen to Jacoby Brissett, it would have been worse against Drake May. And I know everybody falls in with the running, and he ran for that long third down conversion in the preseason game against Washington. I get it. And that running is something Brissett can't do. But feeling pressure off the edge, especially when you have a rookie left tackle making his first career start against the Jets, I don't see May doing that. And I'm not telling you can't ever do it. I'm not telling you he's going to be awful at it, but he's not going to do it to the level of a veteran. So again, big problem. That's why, again, what in the situation can get better? I think those are three key things that can get better. And now, can they get a little bit better against San Francisco? Maybe. Can they get better against Miami? Maybe. I mean, could they maybe be at the point against Miami to start him? I'm not ruling that out. I just think the people clamoring to start him against San Francisco are crazy. I mean, you can have nightmares about Nick Bosa smoking Caden Wallace off the edge and ending Drake May's season. Or Drake May just being under siege and them A-gap and B-gap blitzing Fred Warner left and right and him having no time to get the ball out. And we're talking Jacoby Brissett. I don't know what the exact stat he had, like under 2 seconds to get the ball out on Thursday night. I mean, that's untenable for a rookie quarterback. So I'm not saying sit May all season. There is a path to play him, but those three things have to get better. We also have to talk about the Patriots defense as well. Disappointing night for the Patriots defense against the New York Jets. It's a defense that in week one, they force a turnover on defense. By the way, they've also forced a turnover on special teams against the Bengals. But they force a turnover on defense. They play great. Ja'Marr Chase has no impact. Joe Burrow looks off balance. Cincinnati really can't do anything. They struggle on third down, struggle on fourth down. I mean, I think the Patriots' single best play of the season might have been Jonathan Jones' fourth down stop against Cincinnati. If you want to throw in that Kyle Duggar forced fumble, I'll give you that too. But again, those are probably the two best plays of the season for the Patriots. Then against Seattle, tackling doesn't look as good. Not awful, but not as good as against Cincinnati. And then there's some key spots there. That end of the first half, can't get a stop when you need it. Late in the fourth quarter, you hold them to a field goal, but had you held them to a fourth and out, you win the game. Overtime, can't get a stop either. So key situations where you don't get a stop when you're the Patriots defense. And you have that miscommunication on the DK Metcalf touchdown. Now you go to this Jets game. I thought the tackling was abysmal in this game. I mean, Alex Austin missed that tackle about the 8-yard line that ended up being a touchdown. A lot of missed tackles overall in this game. It just, to me, felt like a defense that, I don't want to say was not fully ready to go, but their tackling has taken a significant step back over the last couple weeks, and that's a real concern because that's something they've been great at for years, and they were great at in week one. And if this is a team that's going to win low-scoring games, the easiest way to do that, force three and outs, get your defense off the field, get your offense on the field, controlling the clock. Well, if you miss a tackle on first down and all of a sudden it's second and three, a lot harder to get your defense off the field. So the tackling was a big problem. And I just thought the adjustments too. Like I mentioned Alex Van Pelt, and I wasn't happy with some of the ways he adjusted in this game. I'm a big supporter of DeMarcus Covington. I'm glad they hired him. He was their first choice to be DC. I thought the first 2 weeks, he was good. I thought week one, he was great. Thought week two he was pretty good. I mean, that miscommunication is more on Kyle Duggar than DeMarcus Covington on the Metcalf touchdown. But I thought against Rodgers, I mean, Rodgers came out in this game, and he was on it. He was looking guys off. He was fitting the ball in tight spaces, and you didn't have Juwan Bentley in this game, first game without him. And it felt like the Patriots kept trying to bring pressure, and it wasn't working. And when they started to play coverage kind of later in the first half, it looked good, but they didn't stay with it enough. And it felt like it took into the second half for them to consistently just be playing coverage. So a little bit slow to adjust there for DeMarcus Covington. And again, I like DeMarcus Covington. It's his first year DC. He's got time to learn. But just slow to adjust. That's something that maybe filed in the back of our minds, because you're going to be playing offenses in San Francisco and Miami. And I know Miami's going to have a backup QB, but they'd have a lot of potent playmakers in the next few weeks. Even San Francisco, with Kittle and Samuel and McCaffrey out, you still have a great offensive line. You still have Brandon Ayuk, who the Patriots tried hard to get. You still have Jordan Mason, who looked great against the Jets in week one. Still a potent, you still have Kyle Shanahan calling plays. Houston, that's a very potent offense as well. So you still have potent offenses coming up. How quickly can DeMarcus Covington adjust to things moving forward? I think that's a key thing to really think about in this game as we move forward. I want to get to some more Patriots topics coming up. I'd love for you to join me, 617-779-7937. Also have the text line here as well. We'll be talking Patriots. We are going to be joined by Tom Carroll in about 25 minutes to give us a preview of BC Michigan State. He's down at Alumni Stadium. But before we get to any of that, it's time to trend with Stiz.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending right now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Red Sox were set to face off against the Twins tonight at Fenway for the second of a three-game series. That game has been postponed due to weather conditions. Tomorrow's regularly scheduled game has been moved from 1:35 to 12:35. Today's game has been rescheduled as a second game of a split doubleheader tomorrow, beginning at 5:35. Tickets for today's game will be good for tomorrow's rescheduled game. The Patriots have the weekend off after they lost to the Jets on Thursday night. They'll play the 49ers a week from tomorrow from San Francisco. Kickoff at 4:05. The Bruins held their first day of open training camp practices on Thursday at the Warrior Ice Arena. Goalie Jeremy Swayman was absent from camp as he and the Bruins continue to work towards a new contract. And Curtis's 2-1 BC Eagles will host the 3-0 Michigan State Spartans tonight. Kickoff at 8 p.m. You can hear that game right here on WEEI. Our coverage begins at 7:30. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More with John Lyons coming up.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, taking you to 6 o'clock. Also, don't forget, tonight we have Michigan State versus BC football. Big game for BC. Coverage starts at 7:30 here on WEEI, and we'll have the call of the game. Can't wait for that one. I have been talking Patriots, though. We're going to continue to talk Patriots for this segment. Kind of what went wrong Thursday, what the Patriots can learn from it going forward, Drake May's timeline, all that's on the table. You can reach us on the text line. Of course, on the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's lead it off here. We have Paul in Saugus. Paul, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
Thanks, John. How are you? I enjoy you talking.
Appreciate that, Paul.
Okay, I just got a couple of points about the Pats. Number one, yeah, I feel bad for Jacoby Brissett as well, but he is getting paid $8 million a year, way more than a career backup could ever expect to make.
That's true.
So, you know, that's a good thing. And the other thing is, I don't think anyone's taken into account the fact that the Patriots had, what, 3 days to prepare,
yep,
as did the Jets. But the Patriots are babies. They're a young team, and the Jets are a very veteran team. So to expect them to be at as good as they can be after 3 days practice as compared to the Jets, I think is really totally unreasonable. They need the extra practice time way more than the Jets do. What do you think, John?
Yeah, Paul, thanks for the call. And I think it's a great point, and that's actually kind of leads me into what I was going to get to next in that, look, the main reason the Patriots lost this game is the Jets are better than them and they're more talented. But I was talking last segment, and of course, if you missed any, go on Apple, go on EEI.com, go on the Odyssey app. They're all for free. You can go back and listen. And of course, by the way, big thank you to John Ryan of RotoWire for joining us last hour. Go back and listen to that if you didn't have the chance to hear it. But that leads me into my next point, because I was talking about, I felt like Alex Van Pelt, I didn't love the game plan and it was a little slow to adjust. I thought DeMarcus Covington was a little slow to adjust in this game. And that's the thing. You have a rookie head coach. You have a rookie defensive coordinator. You have an offensive coordinator who, yeah, has been in the league a long time, but the last time he was the primary play caller was, what, 15 years ago in Buffalo? So almost, I mean, in a way, he's almost a rookie, but we'll say, you know, 15 years ago. And then you have a rookie special teams coordinator who, yeah, he was a special teams coordinator in college at Texas A&M, I think it was, but they weren't even very good, and he's never done it in the NFL. So you have all these new people, these essentially rookies in their positions. And then you have a rookie at left tackle in Caden Wallace. You have other a rookie in Jalen Polk playing a big role at receiver. You lose Jawan Bentley. So, yeah, I mean, I think this whole instance to me, like I was watching this game and I'm like, wow, this is a learning experience too for Mayo and these coaches and some of the younger players, because whatever they did to prepare, it felt like it didn't land. And again, to be clear, the biggest reason you lost this game, the Jets are flat out better than you. Okay, they are. The better quarterback play, better defense than you, especially right, the Jets defense is much healthier than you. So I'd put them as a better defense than you. So, you know, better skill making, skill players or playmakers, I should say, you know, welcome to the radio, John, get that one out, right? Better skill players, better playmakers. So that's the biggest reason you lost this game. But if you look at the Jets, okay, yes, they were at home, but week one, they were on the road in San Francisco across the country. Then they played on the road again on a short week in Tennessee in week two. So they had more travel to deal with than the Patriots over these first few weeks. I mean, the Patriots go to Cincinnati, which is only halfway across the country. Then they're at home against Seattle, and the trip to New York is a short one. So New York, arguably, the Jets, that is, had more travel issues and headaches to deal with than the Patriots with, despite being the home team. So whatever the Patriots did to prepare for this one, it felt like they'll need to make some adjustments going forward on short weeks. Because again, some of the little things, the tackling on defense getting worse each week, coaches being a little bit slow to adjust, like those are all things, again, learning experience. I've been saying, and I know it's not a sexy sports radio topic to say have patience, but I've been saying this for 6 or 8 months. Like, there's going to be moments like this. There are going to be growing pains. So while, yes, I'll say it for a third time, the biggest reason you lost this game is the Jets are better than you right now. And I hate to say that as a Patriots fan, but they are. But another piece of this is this is one of those growing pains, right? They were not prepared well enough for this game. And I'm not saying the coaches suck and they can't do it. But again, it's a short week. It's 3 days to prepare. It's your head coach and your DC and your special teams coordinator, their first time leading units preparing on a short week. And then Van Pelt, I mean, first time in what, 15 years? I mean, go back and look at the 09 Bills. I don't even know if they played on a short week at all. So maybe it is his first time being a play caller on a short week. So it's a lot. So these are some of those growing pains. And then, of course, you have the team come out and just flat out not play well either. So that's why I feel like this game, again, one of those growing pains that if you can build on, if you can learn from it going forward, so if the next time they play on a short week they're better, then okay, I'll be encouraged. But if they play on a short week again early next year, or even potentially later this year, because some of those last few games, they can move to Saturdays depending on the college football schedule. So the next time you play on a short week, whether it's a Saturday at the end of this year, you know, week 17 or 18, or if it's next year on a Thursday night, do you lay another egg or do you look better? Like, these are the things, honestly, to keep track of. You look at Jerod Mayo, you want to walk away from this year saying, okay, is he growing? Is he learning? Because this is going to be the guy as head coach for at least 3 or 4 years. Okay, I'm just, Robert Kraft is not firing Bill Belichick, the greatest head coach of all time, and immediately promoting a subordinate unless he's going to say, I'm invested in this guy for multiple years. So it's not going to be a 1 or 2 year project. It's going to be 3 or 4 years minimum. So can Mayo learn from these things? And we've seen some growth already, right? Like, we've seen Mayo, you know, you had the Judon situation that again, I put that more on Elliott Wolf than Mayo, but it, in the end, wasn't a good look for Mayo, that little argument back and forth with Judon at practice. They trade Judon, and they get a third-round pick, sure, but it just got dragged out way more than it should. Well, the Jalen Reagor situation did not get dragged out and was handled, I think, better. So okay, is that evidence of maybe Mayo learning from that a little bit, and Elliott Wolf too? We'll see. But, and we saw too, even in the summer, the Patriots had a lot of trouble pass protecting. They come out week one, they run the ball a lot. Okay. And now we saw them Thursday night probably throw it too much, use a little bit too much play action. So do they learn from it? That's what you got to think about with this coaching staff. Are they, because look, Mayo's going to be here for several years. DeMarcus Covington, I think, is going to be here for several years. I think Alex Van Pelt is probably going to be here for several years. So these are the guys. Whether you like it or not, these are the guys. So can they get better? And even let's take it out to the players. Drake May, first pass he almost threw. Should have been an easy play. Maybe they thought it was man coverage and Jets played zone. I don't know. Look, that's the way it looked to me. But he almost throws a pick. All right. Well, is that going to happen again when he gets real action, which could be as soon as 2 weeks from now or it could be a month from now, whenever it is he going to learn from that? Is he going to know, okay, I can't just immediately lock in and assume it's man. I got to take that extra 2/10 of a second and figure out, hey, is it man or zone? Or 3/10 of a second, hey, is it man or zone? That's what he's going to figure out going forward. Is the Patriots defense going to improve their tackling? They have 10 days off before San Francisco. Are they going to rebound and look like a better tackling team than they did Thursday night? Can they learn from these things? Because there's going to be these growing pains all year. Like, I don't want to give you a spoiler alert. I don't think they're going to go into San Francisco and light up the scoreboard. They're going to have to grind out that game if they have any hope of winning. So can they do that? Can they bounce back from what happened on Thursday night? Or does it linger? Is it a problem going forward? Right? They got DeMario Douglas more involved. That was great. But are they going to go overboard and try to throw too much? Or do they learn from it and not wait until the third quarter to have Ramondre Stevenson get his sixth carry of the game, which is way too long for your best offensive player, no matter who you're playing on defense, especially a team in the Jets that has a good run defense. So that's the thing. Again, I know it's not the sexy topic to say, hey, have patience, but that we got to monitor, are they learning from these things? Because there's going to be these growing pains. Offensively, defensively, special teams. They had a field goal blocked against Seattle. Does that happen again later this year? Or do they learn from it and they make sure it doesn't happen? Right? That's what you want to know, because you and I know, we all know, a Bill Belichick coach team on the balance of 20 years generally would learn from those things. Those mistakes wouldn't happen twice. Sometimes they wouldn't happen in the first place. No doubt in my mind, a Bill Belichick team would have been more prepared for this Thursday night against the Jets and would have played better. Hell, they won a Thursday night game against a Pittsburgh team that made the playoffs in December of last year. As bad as the Patriots were, they won that game in Pittsburgh. So are the Patriots able to learn from it? And the next time they play on a short week, are they better? Like, that's what's worth watching here. Because this is a team at 1-2. I think we can all agree, not in a great spot right now. Played arguably their worst game of the past 2 years on Thursday night. And I'd say that New Orleans game last year was probably the worst. Maybe Dallas was the second worst. And then I'd put maybe this game at third. So even if you want to say, hey, their third worst game of the last 2 years and what's been a bad 2 year stretch, all right, do they bounce back from it? This next 10 days is going to give us some answers about this coaching staff. And it's not going to give us all the answers, but at least maybe some early indications. Do they bounce back? Do they play better? Do they tackle better? All these little things. So just something to watch going forward. It's been something on my mind for the last few days of, okay, yeah, the Jets are better than them. Patriots got beat up. Bad teams let it fester and it continues. Teams that are either good or rebuilding and in the right direction, like we hope the Patriots are, they learn from it and they move forward and they don't make those mistakes again. So we'll see. Coming up next, I'm excited to talk to Tom Carroll because he's down at Alumni Stadium. Big game for BC football tonight. How about that? Hey, Stiz, by the way, can you think of the last time BC football was maybe better than the Patriots?
You would know better than
me. Yeah, I think maybe like Doug Flutie's time in the early 80s. Like, I mean, honestly, I'm not even like joking here. Like, the BC football team has a chance to be a better story this year than the New England Patriots. Probably 40 years since we've said that.
It's good. I feel the excitement, that's for sure.
Yeah, I certainly do. And it's kind of fun because this is not a college sports area, New England. But when we have a great college team or potentially fun college team, there is some excitement there. And you can kind of feel it. And it's been fun. So coming up next, we're going to go down to Alumni Stadium. We're going to talk to Tom Carroll, get his thoughts on BC, where they're at tonight against Michigan State. And after that, that game will be on WEI later tonight. But first, we're going to get to Tom Carroll coming up next. Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. Got Stiz behind the glass. And we're going to be joined in just a minute or two by Tom Carroll. He's down at Alumni Stadium covering BC and their huge game tonight against Michigan State. So looking forward to that one. You can hear that game here on WEEI. Coverage will begin at 7:30. Game begins at 8. And Stiz, do we have Tom now? All right. We are going to Tom Carroll of WEEI.com. He's down at Alumni Stadium. Tommy, how are you?
What's going on, man? Yeah, I was just out in the rain catching the team walk into the stadium with Bill O'Brien. They call it the Eagle Walk, and the band was leading them in with the cheerleaders. It's always a cool experience, and yeah, it's going to be fun.
So, Tom, that kind of leads me into my first question. It's been a long time since the BC football team had more buzz than the New England Patriots, and it kind of feels that way. Yeah, it kind of feels that way right now, and I want to ask you, what's the atmosphere down there like? I know it's a rainy day, but it's a big game tonight for BC. So what's the atmosphere down there like?
It's a really good atmosphere. And like you said, it is raining. And it kind of feels like a November game right now. But you can tell that there's a buzz down here. And people are excited. People are excited about this football team. And, you know, I don't know if it's raised to the level of passing excitement for Patriots football locally just yet, but maybe 3-4 weeks from now, when the Patriots still have one in the win-loss column and BC football has four, I mean, why not root for a winner? So I think it's getting there, and tonight will go a long way in sending it in that direction. This is going to be a really interesting game. You have an undefeated Big Ten team coming into Alumni Stadium. They haven't really played anyone all that great yet, and they've had a few close games in their three wins, where BC, outside of the loss in Missouri, their first two games came out and looked great. So it's going to be rainy. I think you're going to see a lot of running the ball. Both teams have mobile quarterbacks. So tonight is going to be a big one for heading in that direction, like you said, getting BC in the power position as far as local football goes.
So I want to ask you about Michigan State, because you mentioned it's a 3-0 Big Ten team, but I mean, they don't really have any impressive or marquee wins on that schedule. They only won four games last year. So I'm a little unsure what to expect from the Spartans. What are your thoughts on Michigan State and what to expect from them tonight?
Well, like I had said, they have a mobile quarterback. He's a dual threat guy. I think it's Chiles is how you'd pronounce it, or yep. Chiles. I don't know. You guys can figure that out. But he's a dual threat guy, so that's going to be something to look out for. BC has a really good front seven, a lot of veteran guys. I think maybe the best NFL prospect is at the end there in Ezeraku. So I think if they can contain him, it's going to go a long way in BC being able to control this game, especially because Michigan State has two receivers out tonight. So two guys that would be a huge factor in Michigan State's passing game aren't going to be on the field. You're going to be relying a lot on that athletic quarterback's legs to do a lot of the heavy lifting. So, you know, I think BC can really show the country that they mean business if they can control the pace. And, you know, Bill O'Brien's known as an offensive guy, right? But if this defense can show out, I think people are going to really take notice around the country.
You mentioned Bill O'Brien, and coming into this season, I think he was a big name, and people felt he would make BC better. But then all of a sudden, they go on the road week one, and they beat Florida State, the 10th overall team in the country. Now they close loss to Mizzou and have a big game against Michigan State. I mean, what's your assessment of Bill? Has he done anything drastically different to turn this program around? Is some of the players just maturing? I mean, what has helped BC get from where they were last year to where they are now?
So I think people that don't follow this program closely don't realize that they have a ton of starters returning. So in today's college football, if you can bring back most of your team, that's going to give you a big leg up against everyone else, with everyone just transferring and NIL money dictating where people go. I mean, BC returned, I believe, 15 starters from last year's team. So right from the jump, they were coming in with continuity that a lot of guys in the ACC don't have right now. So you add that in with Bill establishing a really professional operation at Chestnut Hill and guys buying into that. You know, if you can come in here and say, hey, look, I coached Tom Brady to having one of the best seasons of his NFL career. I made Deshaun Watson a all-pro level quarterback in the NFL at a Houston organization that really, you know, wasn't great, right? He kind of turned that thing into a legit operation for a few years down in Houston. You know, there's going to be immediate buy-in from these guys, and that's what happened. And last year under Halfley, towards the end of the year, guys were not really taking practice seriously towards the end, and there wasn't conditioning the way that there is with this organization now. So it's just a different vibe. Guys are just way more invested. They respect their coach. He doesn't put up with any BS. He'll MF guys out on the practice field if he has to. If guys loaf, they hear about it. If he goes long with practice, it doesn't matter. They're still going to condition at the end of practice. I mean, it's just a totally, totally different vibe here. And he's establishing a really, really good culture for BC. And, you know, you can tell he's bought all the way in. I mean, this does not feel like a stepping stone, get back to another marquee job type of thing for Bill O'Brien. This is going to be his legacy type of job. I mean, turning BC around for a guy who's local and grew up watching BC football, and he's got his wife who went here, and it just matters to him. So he wants this thing to be a success as much as the players that came here wanted to be a success. And that's going to, you know, be important for this program over the next few years.
Tom, so much of what Bill O'Brien is doing at BC now, especially offensively, is built around Thomas Castellanos, their quarterback. What are your expectations for him tonight against Michigan State?
Well, you know, like we talked about, the weather's not great. Yep. So I think you're going to see a lot of his legs at work. With that said, I think you're going to see the running backs eat for BC tonight. They've got a stable of three guys. Robichaud's a big bruising back. Treshawn Ward is a dude who's a little bit more of that dual threat running back, but I think you're going to see his legs on display. And then Turbo Richardson, the freshman, another guy that's not afraid to, you know, lay down the hurt. I think you're going to see those three guys get the bulk of the offense tonight, if I had to guess. So when it comes to Castellanos, I think the way he'll shine is with some designed runs, or look, if receivers are slipping out there, he's going to take off. We know through three games and watching the guy last year, he's not afraid to use those legs. So I think you're going to see a lot of ground and pound from a BC team that has one of the best offensive lines in the country.
Tom, last question for you. Who wins and why?
I'm going to BC, and I think it's because they are a better team than Michigan State. And I know that's not, you know, the most hard-hitting analysis in the country here, but look, Michigan State hasn't proven anything to me to start this year. They've had a bunch of cupcake games, and a few of those games were closer than they probably should be for a Big Ten team, right? I think they were close with Florida Atlantic. I think they barely got by Maryland. They destroyed whoever they played last week. I think Prairie View A&M, which is not necessarily a powerhouse. So I don't know how much stock you put into that. Everything I've seen so far from BC this season leads me to believe that this is the type of game where they show up and prove that they deserve more respect nationally. And I think you're going to see that more and more throughout the season, where there were games in the past that BC would typically lose, where it would be close and you just were waiting for that one bonehead thing to happen that would lead to the loss, or undisciplined football that would lead to a million flags that would lead to the loss, or the missed extra point or the missed field goal that would lead to the loss. That just doesn't feel like it's happening here, at least through three games. I mean, to go to Missouri and lose by one score, and it was really two or three bad decisions away from being a BC upset in Columbia. You just got to feel nothing but positivity about the Eagles right now if you're a BC fan. So I think people locally got to get on board here, man. This is going to be the football team to follow over the next few weeks here in the fall.
All right. He is Tom Carroll of WEEI.com. Tom, thanks for taking the time.
Go Eagles.
All right. And I am John Lyons. We had Stiz behind the glass. Stiz, great job today.
Thanks, John.
Popping back and forth. We survived a rain delay, a game postponement. I'm John Lyons. It was a pleasure talking to all of you. Thanks for everyone that called, texted, listened, all that. Stiz, thank you. Great job. And we're going to have BC football at 7:30 p.m. tonight. Get ready for it, folks. Have a good one.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.